You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, Robert, or good afternoon, or whatever.
Valentine's Day. You and me cuddling on Valentine's Day, as close as we can get.
It's as special as it can be.
Yeah.
And I know our wives are very happy about that, and I'm not joking.
I want to get to that immediately, but there, later on in the show, you and I actually have like a Valentine's Day kind of story in our past.
We do.
Moment that, like, if it were on a Valentine's card, someone could close their eyes and picture you and me, and it would scream Valentine's Day to them.
Oh, I can't wait to get to it.
Yeah,
and I know exactly the story you're talking
about. Yeah, yeah. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But I want to know what you got your wife for Valentine's Day, because she deserves, like, an immense amount of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. What I got my wife for Valentine's Day was disappointment. Yeah. I find that if I can give immense amounts of that, it really delivers.
See,
and it really is the gift that keeps on giving in this household.
The ways with which your life bears no resemblance to my life pretty much just like was encapsulated this week. I don't know how many people out there listen to you all the time and know what you did this week and where you went and how you got there, but it's worth telling again to anybody that didn't hear it, because to me, like, with five kids and a dog, it's unbelievable what you did this week.
Well, so we have a dog, Bob. I mean, I would really equate the responsibility level there with no kids, but we do have a dog.
Gotcha. I guess maybe somewhere in the gray area between the dog and the five kids, our lives are different.
Well, Bob, it's like I've always said, children ruin your life. And so this past week, there were a lot of Knicks and Rangers games on, so I did not have my nightly show all week.
Got it.
And it was about a week ago, frankly, right about this time, where my wife looked at me and said, so wait a second, let me make sure I have this straight. You have an entire week without any work to do. Through no fault of your own, but through, you know, because I am a guy that would rather work.
Right.
I would love to work. But I said, yeah. So you're going to be sitting around really doing nothing all week long.
Right.
And I said, yeah, yeah. And she just looked at me and said, that's not going to work.
Now, why would she say that?
Because my wife has a sixth sense about when things, for me, are going to turn sour.
But this is my question. So, like, the cartoon bubble comes out of her head, and she's fast-forwarding to her in her head, saying, all right, here's the scene at our house by, like, Thursday if you've got nothing to do for 5 days. We get to the latter part of the week. This is the scene that's playing out in front of me. What is she picturing? Like, what is she envisioning the house and you are going to look like?
By Wednesday, I would say that she is picturing an immense amount of requests for heavily salted snack chips.
Okay.
And those requests going unfulfilled. And just frankly, with the cold weather and everything going on, you know, we have a Peloton bike, but, you know, chances are it's probably not going to happen.
Right, like laundry's hanging on the Peloton bike, right?
Close to it.
Yeah, okay. So you got laundry hanging on the Peloton bike. You've got, like, crumpled up Big Mac wrappers, like, as like a halo around your recliner.
Well,
right?
No, Bob,
are there, like, five or six empty Starbucks, you know, old cartons? Like, I mean, is this, and you're just there in, like, your George Costanza sweats, unshaven, like staring blankly at the television?
In velvet, yes.
Okay.
Velvet sweatsuit.
All right.
We used to call it the South Philly tuxedo.
Got it.
It was
So she doesn't like that scene. So she says to you what?
Get out.
Get out of the house.
Yeah.
Get away from me.
She basically said, I think it'd be a good time for you to, you know, go somewhere for a couple of days. I said, really? Are you sure about that? She, well, yeah, I have. She had a good amount of work, and so she suggested that I do that. So I went online, and I looked at some airfares, and I looked at some COVID numbers.
Right, and you ended up in Las Vegas.
Yes.
For 4 days.
I looked at Florida, which is still a hot zone
right,
in every way, and it wasn't that cheap to get there. It wasn't that, and I am a cheap man, and it wasn't that cheap to get to Arizona. Still a COVID hot zone, which I love Arizona.
Regardless of where you went, though. Like, you went to Las Vegas and played golf and sat in the sunshine for 4 or 5 days. And here, like, I'm not a Twitter poll guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not a guy that, like, you know, I've never done that. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if there was a way to put a Twitter poll up or, like, whatever people could respond to. What of the people that are listening right now, the guys that are listening right now, this is the question I would ask them. What would they have to get their wife for Valentine's Day to get so much in her good graces that the guy at the wife's suggestion gets to go to Las Vegas for 4 days? Like, he would have stayed home, but the wife is like, no, this is what I need you to do. I need you to get out of my sight. Get on a plane and fly away somewhere and go have fun, and I'm going to stay home and work.
Here's what you're really tacitly acknowledging. I have it figured out.
Oh, let me tell you something. I'm trying to picture with my poor bride, 5 children and a dog, and like normally, I'm at, not COVID, like right now I'm doing all my games from my basement, but normally I would be on the road all the time. You know what I mean? Like, I'm constantly traveling. Mm-hmm. So this year I'm home all the time, but like, I'm trying to picture under what circumstances the cartoon bubble coming out of my wife's head would be, yeah, I really need you to go to Las Vegas for 5 days and just get out of here.
Yeah, the
normally it would be, I would think 99.9% of the time in our situation, the wife would be like, all right, I'm going to Las Vegas for 5 days. And she would collectively, if she could gather up all 5 kids and the dog, gather them all up and just hand them to me, wave, and walk out the front door.
Well, again, I would just, the destination didn't matter.
No.
It was out of sight and out of chips. And that's basically it.
Wow.
And so that's what I did. I went Tuesday. And it's incredibly cheap there right now. And you know, I would say of a normal Vegas week, there was probably a 25% capacity.
Yeah.
Now, I thought we did something lovely together. I didn't forget about her. I sat in the sports book at the Westgate to watch Rutgers play earlier this week. And we got on the phone together and watched the game together.
That nothing says Valentine's Day like you sitting in a Vegas sports book, FaceTiming your wife while she watches the Rutgers game.
While we're both screaming at somebody to defend Luka Garza.
That's incredible. I mean, that's the Valentine's night that for, I would say, most women out there, dreams are made of. That's incredible. The length to which your life, like that you live a life with which I am not familiar, mm-hmm. I can't even sum up more than at the suggestion of your wife, at the demand of your wife. You were forced to go to Las Vegas for 4 days. She kicked you out of the house and made you go on vacation alone.
I will just say this, Bob, and all boils down to one word, choices. We all make choices.
Right.
And as they said in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, I have chosen wisely.
You have,
and
I have too. Trust
you have
me.
Too.
I
no, there's no question. There's no question.
If I told you right now what my wife was doing, mm-hmm. it's Valentine's Day. I'm here talking sports with you. Here's what my wife is doing. My wife and I just realized that all of my son that plays lacrosse, all of his gear is in the trunk of my car in the parking garage in Manhattan.
Oh, that's a
problem.
And
he's got a game at 1:30.
Oh, that's not.
You know what my wife is doing? My wife isn't saying, no, Charlie, you can't play in your game. It's a shame you left your stuff. My wife is picking Charlie up at our house, driving him to Manhattan, getting the parking ticket from me to get the car brought up, to get all the lacrosse stuff out of the trunk, to then drive him back to New Jersey so he doesn't miss his game.
Oh, my God.
That's what she's doing.
Bob, on this part, see, here's the thing. Like, do you want to
On Valentine's Day. This is what she is doing on Valentine's Day.
But this is what we
while
need.
I'm
this
sitting
is
here
what
talking
you and
you.
I need. See, you need to be able to avoid situations like that. I feel like I need to teach you a class. You've seen Master Class. Like, maybe you should enroll with me.
Yeah.
Because situations like that, this is about, here's what makes it work. Frankly, it's the little things. It's the little things. It's that I will get up in the morning. I will make sure that coffee is where it needs to be. And I will, a little bit later on in the day, make that bed. Little things. Little things, Bob, go a long way.
I get my wife coffee every morning that I'm home. Mm-hmm. If for no other reason than it is a very small thank you that she does what she does with the five kids all the times I'm not there.
Mm-hmm.
So really, in our house, the deserving situation would be me telling her to go to Las Vegas for 4 days without me. And right. I'll stay home and you go be by yourself, because she's never by herself,
right.
ever. And on Valentine's Day, she is now humping it to New York City to get Charlie's lacrosse stuff out of the trunk so he can get to his Sunday afternoon game, because I'm going to sit here and talk Jets and Mets and Nets with you. I'll tell you, that's a Valentine's Day made in heaven for any woman. Right? Wow. My wife right now has to be driving in the car thinking, who could be luckier? Right? Like, who could be luckier than her?
Who could be luckier?
Who has stepped in it more than she has?
Yeah, I can't imagine that's what she's thinking. I can't. Well, I really can't.
Because that's not what saints think.
No, it's not.
Right.
It's not. What did you do for her for Valentine's Day?
Her birthday is February 8th, so right. I can kind of like double it up sometimes and get her something nice that covers both days. I had flowers delivered to the house, because you have to get something on Valentine's Day.
Yes.
So I went to her favorite store last week and got her some stuff and some gifts and a gift certificate, so when some new stuff comes in, she can go back and shop at her favorite store. But, you know, I had roses delivered to the house on Valentine's Day, because, like, you can't, no matter what I get her leading up to Valentine's Day, on Valentine's Day, there has to be something.
Yes.
Like, something has to arrive to, like, signify that it's Valentine's Day. So
there were a few chocolate-covered strawberries there for Cheryl this morning, but that's just because the place I went to breakfast happened to have them.
Got it. Yeah, that's because they had those like on the stand up for like the high traffic stuff as you went into or out of the supermarket. Right?
No,
it was
they just
like
made
there was
them
some chocolate covered strawberries there.
And they just made them and said, "Here, you're a good customer. Go ahead." I'm such a bad guy.
You're a dreamboat.
I am going to make dinner later, though.
Ah, good.
I am going to.
That is nice.
Anyway. We are going to talk about sports,
yeah,
and we'll do that momentarily at 800-919-3776. We have plenty to get to, certainly beginning with the Deshaun Watson saga that continues and where exactly the Jets' place is in it, if in fact they are in it. We will also hit on the Knicks, who are at 13-15, playing exceptionally well. Obviously, bad news with Mitchell Robinson, but I'm still not a believer. We'll get to the Nets and words from James Harden last night that, to me, are just tough to take. We'll get into that. And then also, spring training begins, and we will get to the baseball and
yes.
the things that these teams have done, but perhaps more notably what they have not done.
Pitchers and catchers. Pitchers and catchers might be my favorite day of the year in sports. Just seeing on television, when you look outside our houses right now and look at what we're all looking at,
yeah.
and then on television, you see a palm tree, blue sky, and somebody in short sleeves throwing a baseball. You know what I mean? To me, that's just like, and Daytona and Pebble Beach always seem to coincide as well.
Yeah.
Like when I see pitchers and catchers, I see those guys playing Pebble Beach, and for some reason, whatever it is about Daytona is one of those sporting events where it's like, all right, I have no interest in car racing, and I watch one race a year, and it's Daytona because it's the Super Bowl, just kind of out of curiosity, and at the same time, like it somehow signifies that we're rounding the bend, you know, like we're coming out of it, it's going to thaw, and we're going to end up at some point seeing the grass again.
They're playing the Pro-Am at Pebble this week?
Well, there's no amateurs.
Oh.
Which
okay.
actually, for a golf viewer, I have to say, like, I don't think anything about COVID has been good. Not one thing. Except every other shot at Pebble Beach this week, instead of seeing, you know, like Patrick Cantlay and Phil Mickelson, normally I'd have to watch, like, Bill Murray and Ray Romano. And, like, I'm good. I'm good not watching Ray Romano shank a wedge. Like,
see,
I'd really
I'm not.
Rather.
No. I want to see Brad Garrett hit it
no.
in the ocean on 18.
No.
That's what I want
to
see.
No. To me, that's like watching my Sunday morning golf game on television. Like, I watch my schlunks hit the ball in the water on 18. I don't need to watch it on television. On television, I want to watch the guys that know what they're doing. So the fact that there are no amateurs at Pebble Beach, to me, it's a really nice break.
I don't know. I'm good with Kevin James with a couple of chili dip chips right outside.
Well, that's because really your life kind of is summed up by maximum number of chili dip chips.
That's a fair point.
So I got that. But, I, you know, I'm all over the Deshaun Watson Jets situation. I think we should talk about that when we come back.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
So let's start with Deshaun Watson and where the Jets stand here. First of all, Jeremy Fowler, let's hear from ESPN's NFL insider on exactly where the Jets stand from what he can tell in the sweepstakes here on Deshaun Watson.
You do have the New York Jets, of course, which have a beautiful location in New Jersey and lots of good draft picks to offer, a young, energetic coaching staff. They've got it all, right? From what I'm told, Deshaun Watson doesn't have them high on his list. You know, when I talked to a source, the way I asked it is, well, Miami and New York have the most draft capital to make something happen. They said, well, yeah, Miami would probably be the favorite in that case. But I think Deshaun Watson's plan is the anywhere but Houston plan. And so if New York makes the best offer and the Texans tell Deshaun, hey, take it or leave it, he might take it.
I'm getting further and further away from this, and not that it's a good idea. I still think it's a good idea. I still have where my limit is. That hasn't changed. But I'm getting further and further away from the idea that it's going to happen, because ultimately, Deshaun Watson's going to determine where he's playing. And he has that no-trade clause. That's going to ultimately make the decision. And if the Jets are not his first choice and the Dolphins are a place that he wants to be or somewhere else, San Francisco is a place that he wants to be and they can come close on a package. Right now, I'm feeling less optimistic than perhaps I was a couple of weeks ago when you and I were on together that this could happen at this point. My line continues to be the same of three number one picks.
Okay, that's fine. Look, I have not changed my view on this at all, in that I never viewed the Jets as a favorite, because if you are Deshaun Watson and you've got a no-trade clause and you want to win, like, you don't just want out. You have the leverage, hopefully, to get yourself somewhere where you're out and you have a chance to win. Let's be honest, you're not going to the Jets first. The Jets are not the closest team to winning that are still in the mix for Deshaun Watson. But I think the way Jeremy Fowler put it is very, very fair. If the Jets come back with the best offer and the Texans go to him and say, look, I know you've got a no-trade clause, but if you're going to force your way off of our team, this is the trade that makes the most sense for us. We'll trade you there. We're not trading you anyplace else. It's up to you. Well, then I can see then that would probably be the most likely way that he would end up with the Jets. And that probably means that the Jets are going to have to sweeten the offer more than maybe what these other teams are willing to give up. And I'm not a fan of that. And that's where I've been from the start. I do think you can overpay for a player. I do think, and part of this is still me thinking Sam Darnold can do this. We'll get to that. But I do think there is a too much out there. And some of the people are like, back up the truck and trade six number ones for him. No, I don't think that's the way this roster is best served going and getting Deshaun Watson.
I totally agree with that. And the thought process here is, it's funny. You know, when we get into these kind of trade discussions, you think sometimes if you don't make it happen, it's absolutely the worst thing in the world. And, oh, how could you let that be? I don't feel that way. I feel confident enough in where the Jets are and how they have positioned themselves throughout the last year and a half that good things are still very much on the horizon if these draft picks are handled the proper way, if these are guys that end up panning out. Because I'm with you on that, okay? If I'm going to look at this realistically, and even so, with the number of picks I'm willing to give up, I still feel like I can put a lot around him that I'm not going to win this year, but I'm going to win potentially in 2 to 3 years. And him being in that unique situation of 25 years old, a low cap number this coming year for the team that gets him, and a reasonable cap number for the rest of his contract, well, if he's coming here, he understands what that situation is. And he has to believe in that process of where it is headed.
Yeah, but those are good years for a quarterback.
I know.
To waste.
But let's call it, though.
They are.
It's the beginning
It is the
prime.
But it's the beginning. Yeah, but you could
That's why I didn't understand the Matthew Stafford discussion.
With the Jets, you mean?
Yeah, that they kicked the tires on that.
Right.
I get it if you could have gotten him cheaper, and I do think he has good years left, but to me that made less sense.
Maybe. I mean, I guess that's one of those, are they just giving Matthew Stafford away? Let's kick the tires and see.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, you know, the deal that the Rams made to get him shows you that, you know, the Jets were never going to be interested in Matthew Stafford anywhere near that price. So,
and that price was that price because they had to take Jared Goff's contract.
Correct. But I'm also, like, from Deshaun Watson's standpoint, I'm just going to put myself in his shoes. Mm-hmm. You're 25 years old. You got a handful of years under your belt in the NFL. So you probably right now are in that sweet spot of, I know this league. The game has slowed down. I'm probably never going to be better ever in my career, combination-wise, skill and physical health, than I am going to be age 26, 27, 28, 29. You want to come here and spend 26 and 27 of those 4 years needing the Jets to rebuild because you're coming to a bad team that just had to give away all of the other methods with which they were going to try and rebuild to get you? Or do you want to try and get yourself to a San Francisco or a Miami where a lot of those pieces are already in place on those rosters and the Jets have a lot more work to do to put the talent around you? If I'm Deshaun Watson, I'm trying to get to one of those other places.
Now, here's one thing that would change it for me in terms of what my price tag would be, how far I'd be willing to go. If the Jets legitimately are able to make a deal where they're going to get a late one, and I know it might be pushing it, but let's say it's the loser.
You mean
on the
for Sam?
Yeah.
Oh, I think you can get a late one for Sam.
Well, if you can, and let's say it's going to be to the loser of the Carson Wentz sweepstakes, whether it's the Bears, whether it's the Colts. If you were to get a late one, or even San Francisco, if you were to get a late one for Sam this year, and all of a sudden, you are sitting with five first-round picks the next 2 years. That might change what I'm willing to pay.
Okay, so what do you get? All right, so let's say they do that. Let's say they can get a late one for Sam, and you've got three number ones this year and two number ones next year. How much of that are you giving away for Deshaun Watson?
That, in that case, if I had three number ones this year, I would still give up three number ones.
They might want more than that.
Well, let me finish. I would sweeten it with a two. I might sweeten it with Quinnen Williams. I might go that far if I got another one in exchange for Sam. Because I don't want to treat Sam, as so many have suggested, like he's a throw into this deal to give back to the Texans. I don't know that that's
necessarily... But they're not going to want that.
I don't think they want him either.
If they make that trade, they're making the trade because one of the ones you're going to give them is this year's one, which is the second pick in the draft, and they're going to draft
the
quarterback.
And they like Justin Fields or they like Zach Wilson.
Correct.
I agree. So, but there are many that believe that that would be, well, let's take a look at Sam for a year and see if that's our guy, if they don't love either guy. I don't want to treat... But my point is this. I think you can do well for Sam. I think it's probably going to end up being a two, but I think you can do well for Sam, and I don't want to just treat it like a throw-in, as so many have suggested, to try to get something done for Watson.
All right, so let's say you can make a Deshaun Watson deal for three number ones and, I don't know, a two. Okay, so those four picks are all gone. You've got Deshaun Watson. You got no number ones this year. Maybe you still have Seattle's number one next year. But the other number ones are all gone. Or you keep Sam Darnold on your team. If you look at what you can get for the second pick in the draft this year, which you would trade, I think, because you're hoping to create a bidding war for one of those other quarterbacks, because you've made up your mind you're going to keep Sam Darnold. So Sam Darnold stays on the team. You take that two, and you turn it into the seventh pick, the eighth pick, the ninth pick. You know, you're talking about the Broncos or the Panthers or maybe the Eagles even. I don't think the Eagles would make that trade because I guess they're going to let Jalen Hurts be their quarterback. I think that's a mistake, but whatever. You trade somewhere else in the top 10 When the Jets went from 6-3 to get Sam Darnold, they gave up 3 number twos to do that, which is more points on the quote-unquote points chart than you would normally have to move to or pay to get that deal. But having said that, you normally will get people to overpay when a quarterback's involved. No one's trading up to two unless they're interested in one of these quarterbacks.
Right, of course.
Okay, so you are now have a bidding war going to get one of the quarterbacks. So let's say you get a top-10 pick, somebody's second-round pick this year, second-round pick next year, and a third-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somewhere in that range to move up to number two. So you've got Sam Darnold. You're going to make another pick in the top-10 this year.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to make another pick in the first round this year with the Seattle pick.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to make two more picks in the second round. You're going to get somebody's third-round pick. You're still going to have your first-round pick and Seattle's pick next year. All of that talent and Sam Darnold or Deshaun Watson? Can you make an argument that all of that talent and Sam Darnold, your team is better than if you go out and get Deshaun Watson?
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
You know, I have been on this, I don't want to call it a kick, but on this just opinion train that I have not been able to get off. In terms of the Knicks and the talent level, and it's funny, if I could take the Knicks and the Nets and just combine their strengths, it would be an incredible super team.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it.
Because you've got one team that's so interested in playing defense and does an amazing job, and frankly, it's the only way they can win games. And another team that could not be less interested in it, but they have so much offensive talent that they are superior. Now, you know, from a Knicks standpoint, I loved the fact that even at 32 years old, they brought a guy that understands Tom Thibodeau back in Derrick Rose, and I think is going to do a really nice job in not just adding scoring, which they desperately need, as we've seen so far, but also I think he's going to have a really positive impact on Emmanuel Quickley, not just the production, but also whether it has to be as a Thibodeau translator, whether it has to be as just a mentor. I think Derrick Rose is going to do a really good job in that regard. But I still look at this team as a whole, and I understand they're in the seventh seed, and I still don't think they're a playoff team. And I know it's going to be different this year. Maybe they're in that playoff scenario to get in. But I just don't think that the fact that they have a lack of talent is going to play well down the stretch of the year, because you will see some teams that will flip the switch, so to speak, and are capable of doing that. I don't think the Heat are as bad as they have been.
I agree.
I don't think the Hawks are as bad as they have been.
Do you think the floor?
I don't think the Bulls are as bad as they've been.
Do you think the floor that's been set in terms of fan expectations for the Knicks is the lowest of any team in New York City?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, it's amazing to me, a Knicks fan from 25 years ago, what they were used to. Playoffs, conference finals, NBA finals, coming in within a breath of winning the NBA championship, redoing it, running it back with the Marcus Camby, Allen Houston, Latrell Sprewell Knicks, getting to the finals again, those massive playoff series we got every spring with the Pacers and the Heat, even after Jordan was gone. All of that. That there's a Knicks fan that remembers any of that, and now their level of success is, man, I'm just happy I got a team that tries hard.
And there's a level of Knicks fan that's never remotely seen it at this point. You know, younger Knicks fans have never, ever, ever seen it. And they're more interested in becoming fans of other teams elsewhere because of the players.
Well, that's always been my take as to why they can't get a free agent.
Yeah.
Like, you're chasing after guys, unless it's LeBron, and they've tried three times to get LeBron, haven't been able to get him. But if you're chasing after a big-time NBA free agent, you're chasing after a guy's 26 years old. He's never been alive when you've been relevant. Right? Like, that guy was two when the Knicks were good.
Yeah.
So what we think of as the Garden, the Mecca, New York City, Ewing, Mason, Oakley, Starks. Remember that? Remember Knicks Bulls? Remember Reggie at the Garden with the choke to Spike and Larry Johnson and the four-point play? The guy who is the current-day free agent, he has no memory of any of that.
simply playing in Madison Square Garden does not hold anything special for players.
I mean, that guy, today's NBA free agent, when he closes his eyes and pictures the Knicks, he pictures Carmelo Anthony taking fadeaway jumpers on a team 30 games below 500. Like, yep. That's what he thinks the Knicks are. Why would he sign up to go be a part of that?
Well, look, you're trying to change the culture. You're trying to change, frankly, everything about the management of the team.
Yes.
And it's not something that happens overnight with Leon Rose, with Worldwide West, with Tom Thibodeau. But when you are able to see a couple of these guys maybe develop, if Emmanuel Quickley is going to be a really serviceable point guard / scoring guard, which I think he's capable of being, and Toppin actually gets a chance to develop this season, you're still a ways away from being able to attract the top guy to come here. And to me, it's still going to be having to trade for the disillusioned guy who will finally say, yes, I will go to the Knicks.
So you don't think what the Knicks have going right now is the foundation of what the Nets turned into?
Well,
like, why can't RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, Mitchell Robinson, like, why can't that group become what the foundational players, the Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, like, why can't that group for the Knicks become what the Net Foundation was, which was what convinced Kyrie and KD to sign here?
Yeah,
they looked around the league, and as a pair, they said, where could we go win? Where is there a supporting cast? If we went and played with those guys, we could win. You couldn't picture not Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, but let's back this up a couple of years. The Knicks have a couple of more years like they've got right now. They're in that position. You're going to tell me, like, a couple of free agents, if the next KD and Kyrie looked at the Knicks and they said, wow, like, we can't go play with Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett, Mitchell Robinson and Obi Toppin, like, we can't win with those guys? I could see a year or two from now a couple of free agents wanting to buddy up and come play with those guys?
Well, there are a few things that have to happen for that to be the case.
Okay.
The development is obviously number one. Secondly, there is a lot to be said for, while Leon Rose has been in the league forever as an agent on the other side, there has to be it's not even goodwill, it's a respectability, it's a high level of respect as an executive that has to be established. It's the same thing with Wes and the role that he's going to play. And here's the one thing that I do worry about, Bob. I think we can agree, when Tom Thibodeau leaves a place, he leaves them in better shape than when he got there.
Well, they're already in better shape.
Yep. Will there come a time here, though, in the next 2 years, before those guys get here, where that wears thin? Where the Tom Thibodeau being tough on players and they get a little disinterested and tune out, where that wears thin?
Yeah, I can't worry about that. I can't even think about the negative of what's going on right now because there's too much positive.
Yeah.
Like, right now, go back 1 year ago, the Knicks 25 games or 30 games into their season last year were like 5-20.
Yes.
They were non-competitive. So at the very least, a Knicks fan sits down at night, clicks on MSG, and knows he's going to watch effort.
Yes, this is true. And the bar has been set low.
It has been set low.
When you've been in the desert for 20 years, the sand tastes like water.
Like, a Net fan doesn't know they're getting that. There's no Net fan that's going to turn on the Nets and say, you know what, I guarantee, we may not win tonight, but I guarantee I am going to sit here, I'm going to watch my team, and I am going to see maximum effort. Like, right now, and the Knicks, and that speaks to the talent difference, but the Nets have these three transformational talented players. You can rise above a lack of effort and a lack of defense, and those guys can just go out there and flat out outscore and out talent you and win a game. The Knicks can't do that. The Knicks have to give maximum effort to win a game. Having said that, though, Knicks fan turns the TV on, they know, and I think they could turn the TV off after the game's over and say, you know what, we may have lost that game, but I feel it was another night where my coach put a product on the floor where I feel like he is squeezing every possible ounce of juice out of the orange that he can get.
Oh, okay.
And that's
yeah,
just where they're at talent-wise.
But I think that's fair. But because we have set that bar so low, there are people that are taking that next step of, they're a playoff team. Oh, they're going to be able to do something here. It's like, I get it.
Let it
and I'm
play
not
out.
Trying to take away from your joy of experiencing actual basketball that looks like basketball.
That's what I'm saying. Whatever message Tom Thibodeau is giving to these guys right now that's registering, I can't worry about when that message is going to wear out or when that's going to wear thin. You know what? If it turns out that at some point it wears out and wears thin, then what they'll do is what the Nets did. They'll fire the coach that milked every ounce of talent out of them and got them to the point where they could get those free agents, and then they'll let the free agents hire their coach. And they'll say to whoever the free agents are, you hire the coach. Because obviously that's what they said to the guys that are here now. I mean, Steve Nash was hired by Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving.
John in Harlem. Let's hit him here. John, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Hey, what's up, Chris? How you doing, buddy?
Good.
Big fan, second time call. I want to talk about the Knicks, man.
Go.
I'm going to talk about the Knicks. First of all, Tom Thibodeau is the wrong coach. He already started messing up with R.J. Barrett. R.J. Barrett has raised every level of his game, and this man's acting like he's going on his way to not do it. We don't need free agents. That narrative of ESPN, the Knicks can't sign. No, we don't need them. Build our own. We got good young players. We just
But this thing about building your own, you need big-time talent, and you don't have it yet. I love R.J. Barrett as a player. R.J. Barrett is not a franchise player. He's not on that level. You need to develop this talent to get to that point, to get those guys.
Chris, his resume is better than James Harden, Kevin Durant, and all of them before they got to the NBA. You know his resume.
I'm not going to even put the three of those guys in that discussion with R.J. Barrett. I'm sorry. I don't care what the resume was before he got here.
John,
it has nothing to do with it.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
All right, so the Knicks don't need free agents. Give me the team right now that you think is a legit championship contender that didn't use free agency in any way to shape their team to get to the point where they're a legit championship contender right now. What team?
Name one team you said?
So, I mean, start running down the teams that you think are the best teams in the NBA.
Utah
would probably be the outlier. I mean, I think they kind of used free agency to get Mike Conley, but that you're right. They Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, those are their guys. Give me the next one.
Right, that's the point.
But you're picking the outlier. You're picking the outlier. Now run down the other. You are run down the other teams that you think could win the championship. San Antonio's not winning the championship.
No, San Antonio won champ. I'm talking about teams that won championship.
San Antonio, you know what that is? Using the Spurs as an example right now is like saying the Yankees need to build their team the way they did when they had Mantle and Maris. Like, that is a bygone era in the NBA. It's not about that anymore. That was a time when teams mostly just built their team through the draft and found their franchise player in the lottery and built around them that way.
It's not done that way
anymore.
Please go find me another franchise player that – or not – let me rephrase that. Go find me the number of times that you have found a franchise player in the second round like Kawhi Leonard. I mean, it doesn't happen.
You can't count on that.
No, you cannot, John. Thanks for the call. You cannot count on that. See, this is, Bob, the crux of my issue with the Knicks. The folks who talk about keep building, that's great. You want to count on the Mavericks being in the lottery this coming year and the Knicks don't make the playoffs and maybe you have two lottery picks? All great. All phenomenal. Love it. That's fine. Don't count on getting a franchise player with the lottery pick. I think the Knicks are going to have to get that franchise player by making a deal to get one or signing one in an offseason.
God bless. If only someone could have seen on FaceTime what I just saw. That was entertaining.
I had to sneeze.
Look, getting the top player to build around via the draft, like Milwaukee obviously got their top guy the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
The Sixers have gotten their top guys the old-fashioned way. But Milwaukee tried to go out and completely remake their team this past offseason. And part of it failed. The Sixers have utilized free agency. The Clippers obviously have utilized free agency.
Hasn't worked out for
the Sixers yet. The Lakers obviously have utilized free agency. I mean, the other teams, and the Nets, the other teams that you are thinking of right now that you would pick to be in the playoffs or to be a legit championship contender, this has, and I mean, even think about, you know, Durant to Golden State. They built a very, you know, small dynasty for a handful of years on Kevin Durant not being able to beat Golden State. So he buddied up and went and joined Golden State.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
So I did tweet out a picture at Chris Carlin that says, Happy Valentine's Day to this very lovely and very real woman.
All right.
So, you know, there you go.
We got two words for you. Photo shop.
If you know me, you know I have no idea how to work that. 800-919-3776. I want you to just take a listen to this for a minute. It was Rachel Nichols yesterday.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
Interviewing James Harden. And it was about how things went down at the end in Houston. And here was her question about the about that. Just how he felt as the lead up to the trade kind of went down.
I don't like it at all because that's not who I am. The drama, the extra, whatever you want to call it, the negativity. For me, I don't really, you know, like negative energy. It's draining. So I don't like how it necessarily, you know, happened. I feel like it could have happened a lot smoother, a lot easier. But, you know, it is what it is. I wasn't trying to be disrespectful. I wasn't trying to be selfish. I feel like the front office knew, you know, where I stood and what I wanted. Apologize for how it, you know, it went down, but I guess I had to do what I had to do in order to, you know, get to where I wanted to go. You know, credit to Houston. You know, they didn't necessarily have to trade me to Brooklyn. You know, they could have traded me anywhere. But those are some stand-up guys over there. It ended up the right way. Just didn't like how, you know, that month or two played out.
I'd like to go through that again and hit a ding for every hypocritical thing that he said.
How many dings would there be?
About seven.
Okay.
Okay, you know, I didn't love how it went down. That's not me. Well, no, actually it is you.
Yep.
Because you've run three other superstars out of town. You wanted to talk about how you're sorry for how it went down, but, you know, I did what I had to do. I wasn't being selfish, but I had to do what I had to do to get out and get what I wanted. Bob, I truly don't have problems. Like, Deshaun Watson, okay? He signed this contract last year, and now he wants out of Houston. And I think there are some extenuating circumstances there. And frankly, he was smart enough to have a no-trade clause included so that he could help determine what his situation would be. I don't hold it against Deshaun Watson as to what happened. But when you go out, and let's call it what it is, purposely tank to get out of town, you show up way out of shape, you are giving minimal effort, not just on the defensive end, but the offensive end, where you look at some of the tape of what was going on, throwing the ball away, forcing turnovers that, frankly, just looked like on purpose. I mean, I would go back to see if he was shaving points. That's how bad it looked at times. That's where you lose me. It's one thing to respectfully want to go and get yourself out of town, and things just aren't working out. Never mind that when Dwight Howard was a superstar, you ran him out. Never mind that when Chris Paul was a superstar, you ran him out, and Russell Westbrook, the exact same thing, that you couldn't get it done in Houston. But now you want to get to the place where it's going to be nice and easy for this to happen, and you do it by showing up 25 pounds heavier or whatever, and you just give minimal effort on the floor. It's unconscionable.
Yeah, I mean, how anybody could look at how Deshaun Watson has been treated or feels like things have deteriorated with the Texans and compare it to over the last, whatever, 7 or 8 years, what the Rockets tried to do for James Harden?
Yeah.
James Harden was treated like gold compared to how Deshaun Watson, the situation Deshaun Watson finds himself in with the Texans.
Including the lead up to just weeks before trading Westbrook away to get John Wall because supposedly he'd rather play with John Wall, and now they're stuck with John Wall. You know, and like to me, that's just, it's unreal. It is unreal that this is why I'm so down on what this situation is at Brooklyn.
Well, yeah, I mean, now we're here in New York, so we got to look at it from a Nets perspective.
Right,
and what
exactly.
I would be worried about from a Nets perspective is when you bring a guy like Kyrie in, who is obviously a complete wild card, you don't know if Kyrie's going to be even at, you know, in the lineup next week. He could all of a sudden say, you know what, I need some more mental time, and he might be gone. You have no idea. And James Harden, it's really, you are bringing a certain culture to your team. I know we use that word culture over and over again. It's probably the most overused word in sports. You know, the Jets right now are trying to bring in Robert Saleh to change the culture. But there is a lot of truth behind it. There's a reason that it's an overused word. Because when you have James Harden and Kyrie Irving on your team, there is a certain culture that goes along with having those guys on your team. And to me, the most fascinating element of having Kevin Durant as a part of this group is Kevin Durant has established himself as one of those guys. And when I say those guys, the Steph Currys, the LeBron James, I mean, whatever, you know, the Michael Jordans, not as good as Michael Jordan or as good as LeBron James, but guys that are capable of being the best team, a best player on a team that wins a championship. James Harden has never been that.
Nope.
James Harden's not one of those guys. So now, can one of those guys, meaning Durant, carry a guy who's never been that guy to a championship? And I do think, you know, watching this group just play like zero effort defense and try and use incredible offensive talent to just flat out outscore people, traditionally, that's also not what has won championships.
It's not going to either.
I agree. I would not pick them to win the title.
Neither would I. I don't know that I would pick them to get out of the East right now. Spike in Staten Island is next, 98.7 ESPN. Spike, what's going on?
I'm in Staten Island now. My God, I keep moving.
That's what it says on the screen. I didn't know if it was a different Spike. Sorry if I offended you.
You can't offend me. You just make me laugh all the time. In the words of the great Professor Erwin Corey, however, so listen, here's where I go with the Knicks. They built it from the top down. There's no question in my mind. You guys know my passion for the Knicks. But by the way, I'm talking to two great play-by-play guys. You're very excitable. The only one more excitable
you're talking to
than
one, and
one of you guys is Gus Johnson, right?
Sure, Spike. No. We appreciate it.
No. Yeah, it's great. I love when you do games. You're part of the addition. So here we go. So you know they get what was the agent? My memory's going. Leon Rose, William Wesley, and they get Tom Thibodeau, who, like him or not like him, he can coach hoops, man. He lives, eats, sleeps. He was best friends with Rick Majerus. We understand all that. They stole quickly. I feel bad for Mitchell Robinson. Wasn't a big fan of his, but as a human being, I hate to see a guy get hurt. He's playing really well last night. Picking up Derrick Rose for, I won't say what I think of what they got rid of, but they got rid of someone that didn't produce very much. Derrick Rose can still ball. Maybe 20, 22 minutes a game. So where do the Knicks go here in this expanded playoff thing? I don't know. This is for Colin. But because you're a little down on them still. But I know it's more enjoyable to watch. That's for sure.
It's not that I'm down on them, and thanks for the call. It's more about setting the expectation level because I know how excited people are, and I think they are shooting for the moon right now when they're not ready. That's all. I don't want to take away your joy of watching actual competitive basketball. I just want to make sure that people don't get ahead of themselves. And I've talked to a lot of people. They're not saying they're going to win the title, okay? They're saying, listen, this team might be able to do some things in the playoffs. No, you're not doing some things in the playoffs. If the Knicks actually made the playoffs, it'd be an incredible season.
But yeah, I mean, it's nice that they have Leon Rose and Worldwide West. We have been told what the impact should be of having those guys here. The only thing they've done is go through a draft and bring in Derrick Rose.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when Kyrie and KD, the next iteration of that shows up, then you can tell me, hey, that was the value of having those two guys and their influence take over the Knicks.
And but that's what I was talking. That's what I'm talking about when I'm establishing that.
Yes, until a player shows up, then what does it actually mean? Bring players. That's what we want.
I don't think it's too much to ask. I'm going to let you tell this story
because I think
from the you were somewhat of an observer. If this is the story that I think it is, we haven't really discussed it, but I'm pretty sure. I need to hit the mute button. I'm pretty sure that if this is the story I think it is, I was somewhat mindless.
Yeah, I mean, if you and I have multiple stories of our relationship that would fit on Valentine's Day, then that would be worrisome. So I think, we're thinking of the same story. I'm not telling the whole story. I mean, we're going to go back and forth, but I think the jumping off point at least would be, so we're in San Diego at the Super Bowl.
My the year job, is 1998.
Yeah, my job is to cover a team all week for the radio station, but your job is basically akin to, like, the scene at the end of Trading Places where the guy representing the Dukes goes into the frozen orange juice pit to, like, try to bid the price up, and then what ends up happening to that guy, and they have to drag him out and put him on a stretcher? That's the best comparison or the best image that I could give people to what it's like to be, and maybe you can go into further detail, what it's like to produce Mike and the Mad Dog at the Super Bowl for a week. Like, being their producer is hard Monday to Friday, just in the studio. Being their producer for a week at the Super Bowl, from the outside looking in, impossible is just about the only way to describe it, right? Like, you're running a triathlon every day.
Yeah, and it's not like it is now at the Super Bowl where 9 billion people are there pitching stuff, right? You had to go and get the guests. You had to go.
Right.
Like, they're paying for you to go to San Diego, and so they're, meaning the station, and they're expecting it to be star-studded guests.
Every 15 minutes.
Exactly. So I made this big chart on a folder for every 15 minutes of the show, and I would get up at 5:30 in the morning, and you knew this because we were roommates on this trip.
Yeah.
And I would go down to the lobby trying to track down people as they're, you know, going back and forth. And, you know, I'd have Joe Theismann coming one way, and I'm trying to grab him. And here comes Tom Jackson another way, and I'm trying to grab him. Meanwhile, Mike comes over, wants a Diet Coke. All right, I got to get him into. And listen, it was part of the job. It's fine.
Yeah.
It is. It is running a double marathon all week.
Okay.
And Tuesday, somehow this phenomenal show came together. I got Bill Walton, who lives in San Diego, to come over in person. And, you know, of course, every producer then is bothering him, and they got him out of it. I mean, like, it was just a great, great show. Dick Enberg. It was an amazing show. And at this point, my body was just so stress-ridden that on Tuesday night it shut down. And you'll remember I got really sick.
Yep.
I believe your description of me that night, is Carlin coming to dinner? No. He is wrapped up in his bed like a burrito.
Yeah. He is wrapped up in his bed like a burrito. I believe I may have seen an IV, but
yes.
I'm not 100% sure.
Next day I missed the show, which I was so disappointed. I was feeling so crummy. I had booked Joan Embry from the San Diego Zoo like it was the Tonight Show.
Right.
And she brought
the animals
a snake.
Showed up, yes.
And
I remember
she
that.
Brought a ferret, and the ferret peed on Steve Cohen's shoe. It was like, I wish I had seen all of them. But anyway,
you did miss good stuff that day.
Yes. Point
right.
being.
Now we get all the way to Friday.
Right, where it's just an exhausting week, and Friday at 6 o'clock, I'm just like, oh, we are here.
Right.
And I could not be in a more brain-dead state.
It is San Diego at sunset, and you are done with your week of producing Mike and the Mad Dog. And I'm like, my roomie, we need to go out. I just need to get this guy out and take a walk. Mm. So we go out. There's a dock along the water by the convention center there. And I remember there was like this peddler's village. It was like a tourist spot.
Yeah.
And we're walking along, and you had this look on your face of like, I just need some TLC here. I need some care. And I'm like, I'm gonna buy him an ice cream cone. I would like an ice cream cone. So I got you an ice cream cone. I got an ice cream cone.
It was chocolate.
And right. And as the sun is setting over the water, we're walking dockside, eating our ice cream cones. And somehow I had this out-of-body experience.
I know what triggered it.
Where I could see the looks on all of the people's faces walking in the opposite direction, getting a gander at you and me. And each person on their face had these smiles of kind of like, oh. And I'm thinking, why do these people keep looking at us? And then I kind of had like the out-of-body experience where I realized what they were looking at. That we're both in like white golf shirts, little khaki shorts, our tennis sneakers, the sun setting. We're walking side by side, eating our ice cream cones. And it was Valentine's Day. It was Valentine's Day in January at the Super Bowl. We were very, very clearly a cute couple walking at sunset.
And
everybody couldn't believe how cute we were.
And I'm just licking this cone like, ice cream. And you just turned to me, and the triggering thing for me of, wait, something must be wrong, is that the now sadly departed Kevin Green went past us on a four-wheel ATV on this boardwalk.
Forgot
about
that.
Shot us this look like, what the hell are you two guys doing? And I'm like, wait, I'm a Steeler fan. That was Kevin Green. Ooh. Ice cream. And you just turned to me. How many people think we're a couple right now?
Everybody. Absolutely everybody. We were just a cute little radio producing Valentine's card. Walking waterside at sunset.
Oh, look, it's two portly guys walking together eating ice cream.
Right. They must be together. And we were. Just not like that. Not that there's anything wrong with it.
Not that there's anything wrong with it at all. Not in the least, but
it just registered to me when I kept on looking at the same look on people's faces walking in the opposite direction, because I was kind of brain dead by the time we got to the end of the week too, and about the fifth or sixth people walking by, I was like, oh, I think I understand why they have that look on their faces.
But I have to say, during the course of the week, my illness, all of it, it was as if we were in a relationship the way you cared for me.
I'll
never forget that.
I was empathetic.
That was the moment I knew that I loved you.
Yeah, that was. I just remember even being an intern and listening to like Bob Gelb talk about like what it was like to be in charge of that show that week, and it sounded like it was like a death march for like 5 days for a producer. You're just trying to get to 5:45 on Friday. Get me out of here.
You're talking about your head being on a swivel all over the place.
I bet.
Who's that? Who's right. that? What is that? Zach Crockett?
it's
a fat man sprinting through the lobby of the Marriott right on the boardwalk.
I'll be right back. I think I just saw Georgia Frontier with a bottle of Metamucil. I can get her on. I know I can get her on. I'll be back in a minute.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.